Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 17. Tonight we'll be talking private property and taxes. I'm joined by the illustrious crew of Eric Taylor and Chelsea Cummo, and the infamous crew of Kirk Pettis and, of course, myself, Matt Winterer. Tonight we will be talking private property and taxes, and that means we have to turn it over to Chelsea, who will be inspiring us. Please take it away.
All right. So tonight we just wanted to talk about private property ownership and how property taxes affect that. Now, as an accountant, if I were to be able to change one thing about our tax code, it would immediately be to eliminate property taxes and find other avenues for reaching those goals of, you know, raising money for the government, whether it's for schools or roads or what have you. Now, the reason that I'm so adamantly against property taxes is simply because, in my mind, if we have private property, then I should be able to go out, live on my land, grow my own food if I want to, and be self-sufficient without having to pay the piper. Now, the second that you have property taxes, in my mind, that's eliminates the idea of private property. And one of the biggest differences between a socialist or a communist society and a republic or democracy is this idea that the government doesn't own industry, nor does it own property. Rather, the property is it belongs to the citizens or the sovereigns themselves. Now, and the whole reason that I propose that property taxes eliminate the idea of private property is, let's think about this for an example. So if I decided that I wanted to be a self-sufficient, self-sustaining person, and I wanted to buy a piece of property outright, own it, grow my own food, make my own clothing, use my own energy, I wouldn't be able to do that because if I don't pay the government my property taxes twice a year, eventually what happens is that the government comes and takes that property. So it's a perpetual rent. It's not an ownership. Anyone that thinks that they own a piece of property, see what happens if you don't pay your property taxes. What happens is the government comes and takes it away from you. So is that property really yours, or is it something that you're permitted to use for a period of time such that you pay your perpetual rent to the government?
It sounds fairly reasonable. I think there's a couple of problems with that, and they could be addressed. My main concern personally is, how do you handle things such as plow services during the winter in front of your own home?
Oh, I'm saying, what if you didn't have that? You know, what if I bought a remote piece of land and I literally asked for nothing? I asked nothing of the gas company. I asked nothing of the electric company, nothing of our public utilities, nothing of our grocery stores. I mean, so in a theoretical situation, let's say that I wanted to go out and live on my land 100% independently, ask nothing from anyone, what would happen? The government would confiscate that land.
In this state, yes.
Which state wouldn't they? And can you?
Actually, Alaska will pay you to own the property there.
Well, that's actually true, but there's a reason for that, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Very much so. There's a lot of oil money that's inside that state, and there's a pipeline that goes across it that pays for that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Matt, what you're alluding to is that our local governments spend a lot of money, and so where are they going to get that revenue from to fund the local government? So mm-hmm. the most... pretty much the predominant way is through property taxes. So how do you combat that by playing devil's advocate? What Matt was doing is how do you deflect that argument? Well, you know, how are you going to pay for plowing the roads out in front of your house, being in Minnesota or whatnot?
Well, I have an easy solution to that question.
What's that?
Increase sales taxes. Sales and use taxes.
Yeah, but then,
I mean,
then
people pay taxes in a multitude of ways. It doesn't have to be simply because of the fact that I own something. I mean, whether it's sales tax or use tax or income tax, there are a plethora of different ways that our governments, whether local, state, or federal, use in order to obtain revenue and monies from its citizenry. And the idea that the only way that we could fund our schools is through property tax is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and I always look back, I'm always surprised at the beginning of our country, that most of the colonies and therefore the states, when we unionized America, that it most of the states had property taxes as well. It was when you think back at those times when communications were lacking, infrastructure was lacking, and where do you get revenue to fund the local states and governments? Property taxes probably would be one of the easiest, as import-export tariffs and such. But, you know, nowadays, a sales tax, you know, I always say a usage tax is by far the best and most just way of siphoning income, siphoning private property from people that reside in the territory. So, and nowadays, but the problem with that is you'd have localized sales taxes, and then you'd have state sales tax, and then a federal tax. So depending on every different location where you're at, there'd be three taxes to consider. But wasn't
and we already have that. That's already existing. There are some like 36,000 or 40,000 different taxing authorities for sales tax in the United States right now. And I'd have to double check that figure, but it's enormous. And so we already have this in place. Now, there are a lot of localities that currently don't have a local sales tax, which is fine. I mean, that obviously makes it a little bit easier, but there's nothing to hinder them or stop them from doing so. And the thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is that that they are there because a lot of times it's just a lot of the burden of making sure that those sales are in compliance, the burden lies on the business owner, not on the purchaser. And a lot of that is basically because the government knows that it's much easier to make the business accountable for their sales than it is to have each individual person in the country submit their own sales tax return or their use tax return. And so I'm not suggesting that that would necessarily change, but we have systems in place that work with checks and balances to ensure that our government is getting the remittance that they should. And I just don't see any piece of argument so far, and certainly challenge me on this, but I don't see any reason why property has to be linked to taxes at all.
Yeah, and there, when you talk about usage tax, Steve Forbes ran for president based on that idea, 17% flat tax, period. And you know that at least from a federal level, you know it covers everything, and it's not a regressive tax at all. It's just, you know, it's a usage tax. You know, what you, the more you consume, the more you pay.
Well, it's just hilarious that we would need 17% of everything to fund the federal government.
Well, it's much higher than that now for taxpayers.
Yeah, but it's just ridiculous how large and our federal government from what do they really do in the day-to-day of running in states when you live in a sovereign state outside the federal government, how much influence does the federal government have?
Well, I mean, who is it that said we don't have a tax revenue problem, we have a spending problem? So it's not like our revenues are too low, but maybe that our spending is a little too high?
I think that was a Matt Winter original.
It might have been. But I mean, I guess the whole point that I just wanted to bring up is that our whole lives we've been used to hearing about property tax, and we've just grown accustomed to the fact that, you know, it's okay, that that's just a natural part of life. And I would suggest that it is one of the most unconstitutional things I've ever heard of. Yet we are apathetic to how offensive it is. I mean, the entire American dream is built around the idea that you can own your own home. And I would posit that the fact that we even have property tax, I don't care how high or low it is, just the fact that it exists completely eliminates the idea of private property ownership. Which means that essentially our government owns all property in this land, of course, Indian reservations notwithstanding. But the fact that if you don't continue to pay that bill, they can take it away from you. And what does that sound like? That sounds like rent. That's not ownership, that's rent.
Well, the government owns all of us as citizens as well. We're not...
assuming that we act
the government anymore.
Eric, you got that howling wolf?
I should probably get that.
Well, that's kind of the essential thing. I mean, but here's the point, though. So if you buy private property, you're going to have to pay sales tax on that, too, then, in the future, if we abolish the property tax. Because I don't think we pay...
Sales tax is based on a transaction, and that's an entirely different scenario. I'm speaking about being taxed for owning something. So if I go and I buy a plot of land, that no matter whether it changes hands or not, I will continuously have a bill year after year after year ad infinitum.
Could argue against that. I mean, private property is the essence of liberty, and you're exactly right. There is no private property, and when it can be taken away from you from not paying your taxes, that is completely unjustified for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, in my opinion. And it's but what we were bringing up earlier was, so how do you combat that with people that are so glued to the fact that, you know, all the services government funds, you know, the majority of it is paid for by property taxes. So
I think those things need to just be separated in people's mind. I mean, just because something has been done before doesn't mean that it needs to go on that way. Just because people have done something in the past doesn't mean it's the best idea that's ever happened. And I think that there was a clip from Milton Friedman, a very, very smart man, I believe, who won the Nobel Prize at one point in time. Could we roll that clip from Milton Friedman, maybe illuminate this topic a little bit more?
Yep, here we go.
Dr. Friedman, my name's Ed Arkin. I'm in free enterprise, I feel. And,
no. Hold on. You guys there?
It's coming.
The clip dropped, so I'll continue here.
Reload it.
Can you just paraphrase?
Here we go.
Mystic to a true free enterprise. Can we run the country without income tax?
Well, there's a sense in which all taxes are antagonistic to free enterprise. And yet, we need taxes. We have to recognize that we mustn't hope for a utopia that is unattainable. I would like to see a great deal less government than we have activity than we have now. But I do not believe that we can have a situation in which we don't need government at all. We do need to provide for certain essential government functions, the police function, the national defense function, function of preserving law and order, of maintaining a judiciary. And so the question is, which are the least bad taxes? And in my opinion, and this may come as a shock to some of you, the least bad tax is the property tax on the unimproved value of land, the Henry George argument from many, many years ago. The next least bad tax is a flat rate tax on income above an exemption. So in answer to your question, if I could design my ideal tax system, it would contain an income tax. But it would not be the kind of monstrosity we have now. It would be a flat rate tax on all income from whatever source derived, less only a personal deduction and strict occupational expense. And that kind of an income tax, I think, would be the least inconsistent with a strong free enterprise system. You know why? It's an interesting thing if you're talking about taxes, about why it is that the property tax is so unpopular. It's not unpopular for good economic reasons. It's unpopular, in my opinion, for one simple reason. It's the only tax left on the books for which people have to write a big check. The income tax is a far worse tax. But, and I have to admit that I have some part of the guilt in this process, because during World War II, I worked at the Treasury and helped to design the withholding system. My wife has never forgiven me for it. But with respect to the income tax, we've arranged it, so it's taken off bit by bit, and it's almost painless. With respect to the sales tax, we pay a little bit of it each time. With respect to the corporate tax and excise taxes, they're hidden in the price of things we buy. We don't even know we're paying them. But with respect to the property tax, that remains a tax that we as individuals have to pay and that we have to write a big check for. That's the fundamental reason, in my opinion, why it's so unpopular. And in fact, I think, I hate to say this because it's giving hostages to fortune, but if you wanted to reduce the unpopularity of the property tax, the way to do it would simply be to provide for an effective method whereby it could be withheld at source in small payments, and that would eliminate a large part of the objection to it.
It's a little bit of a devil's advocate clip, and I didn't mention that, but
that would have been good to know.
Well, you know, But Chelsea's argument's completely valid for,
right.
I mean, it's for the essence of liberty. I mean, to be able to go off and be self-sustaining, the basis of liberty as that, and you have to come up with revenue to support that. But at the same time, you don't want someone that has all the money to go and buy all the property everywhere. And then there's no property left to even, I mean, in a sense, create a monopoly out there.
Well, but, I mean, you would have to sink a lot of your money into that. And you know, I mean, you'd have to be extremely rich. But just to speak to the clip really quick, unfortunately, he didn't get into the ethos behind the taxes. He was speaking more of people's, in my interpretation, people's perspective and how popular it is, not necessarily whether it's just. To me, he was just speaking about why people don't like property taxes. And I think that the argument he was making for the mass population was much different than the conversation we're having tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, he was speaking the fact that people don't like them because it's a huge chunk of change all at one time. You pay your property taxes in two lump sums, and so it's more painful when you have to write that check. Whereas with sales taxes, you pay a little bit at a time every time you make a purchase, or a lot of different sales taxes or even corporate taxes are hidden into the price of the things that we buy on a daily basis, so we don't even know that we're paying them. So that just speaks to the popularity of them and the general consensus of what people like or don't like and how much of a pain they feel at the time that they're paying those taxes. But that's an entirely different conversation to be had as opposed to whether they're just or whether they should be in existence or how they should be applied.
But he was arguing that it was the most just tax out there because he was saying that it is.
Oh, he was speaking to unrealized.
It's painful because people do it. But in his argument, though, it is the most just tax.
Well, I thought he specified it was unrealized gains on property, not necessarily property taxes in general. So I'd probably have to listen to that again. So maybe that's for later, but when I heard him speaking about it, he didn't say just property taxes in general. So I thought I heard him say something about unrealized gains on property, which would be, you know, a property going up in value and then you paying some sort of income tax essentially on the gain of the property value.
Well, that's kind of why the property tax always goes up. That's probably what he's relating to, too, that, you know, that it's not really relevant. I mean, the local government says, all right, your property's worth this now without an exact appraisal. And then, you know, and so it's kind of depends on the cities kind of look at how much money they need and then kind of reverse engineer their property taxes in a way to acquire that much money.
That's exactly what they do.
And so for people that not everyone in a municipality or a city is landowners though at the same time. So,
but they pay rent and part of their rent payment has to overcome those property taxes.
That is true.
So renters, even though they're not cutting the check, they're paying for those property taxes. And I think that, and that speaks to, again, the popularity. When we talk about, you know, how people feel about different taxes, if I'm a renter, I don't see that property tax bill, but you better bet that my rent is paying that property tax.
But as an accountant, does a landowner that rents get to take that property tax that they pay off the income they acquire through renting?
No.
There is a standard deduction, yes. And if they are a business owner renting out, that's a business expense. However, as far as I'm concerned, that's only being able to take a certain piece of the money that I pay them and then not pay income tax on that portion. So it's just like being reimbursed for it. So the renter is, you know, paying for those property taxes instead of the owner, essentially. It's a pass-through, if you will.
Maybe I have another clip. Maybe I should have played this before I put I rolled the devil's advocate Friedman clip. but this is by the this clip's by the New York State Tax Department, and it goes over what property taxes are. It's dry, but what property taxes are and how they're assessed. It's 4 minutes long, but it kind of goes over what Kirk was talking about, kind of how counties and cities assess how much money they need, and then they parcel it up so that they can reach that total assessment. So this might be.
Oh man,
pretty excited about that, man.
Oh, I'm elated.
Yeah. It is.
Let's hear it.
All right.
Nice beat.
Hi, I'm Patrick from the New York State Tax Department, and in this video, I'm going to give you an overview of property taxes, what they're for, how they're collected, and how to make sure your assessment is fair and accurate. In New York, school districts and local governments use property taxes to fund public education and to pay for services like police and fire departments. The amount of your property tax bill is based on the total value of real property you own. Real property, or real estate, is generally defined as land and any permanent structures attached to it. This can include houses, gas stations, office buildings, and vacant land, as well as farms, apartments, and in most cases, mobile homes. The total value of your real property is determined by a local official called an assessor, and the determination he or she makes is called an assessment. Assessors are typically employed by towns, cities, villages, or counties. To ensure that all properties are assessed fairly, your assessor should conduct reassessments on a cyclical basis. Reassessments are the best way to ensure that all property owners pay only their fair share of property taxes. For homeowners, your assessor should base your assessment on the current market value of your property. He or she can determine the market value by looking at recent sale prices for similar properties in your community. Once your assessor determines your property's market value, he or she will calculate your total assessment by multiplying the market value of your property by the local level of assessment. If your city or town was recently reassessed, the level of assessment will still be close to 100% of market value. However, if it's been some time since the last reassessment, it's likely that the level of assessment will be less than 100%. The longer it has been, the lower the level of assessment will be, and the more likely that your assessment is no longer accurate. If your community assesses at 100% of market value, the total assessed value of your property should be roughly equal to its market value. If assessments are not at a market value, you can use the market value listed on the assessment roll as a starting point to determine if you've been assessed fairly. The assessment roll is a listing of all assessments in your community, and in most communities, this listing is first made public in the beginning of May. We encourage you to check the assessment roll each year to ensure that you're assessed fairly and are receiving any exemptions for which you're eligible. If you feel your assessment is inaccurate, you have the right to contest it. Our website provides more information on this process, including an informational video called "Is My Assessment Fair?" Keep in mind that a change in your property assessment doesn't mean you'll see a change in your tax bill. Your actual tax bill only changes when bigger local budgets are adopted, other revenue sources shrink, the total of your assessed property in a municipality changes, or the tax levy apportioned to the different municipalities changes. So, how does your assessment translate to the amount of taxes you pay? First, taxing jurisdictions, school districts, municipalities, counties, and others have to determine the amount of revenue that needs to be raised to fund public services. They determine their budgets, the total projected expenses for the year, and then subtract all revenues from sources other than the property tax. The result is the levy, the total amount of property taxes to be collected. The tax levy is then divided by the total assessed value of the jurisdiction to arrive at the tax rate. Ultimately, your assessment will be multiplied by the tax rate to arrive at the property taxes you owe. For more information on property taxes, watch our other informational videos or visit our website.
Dude, Eric, do you have "Is My Assessment Fair" queued up?
Is my assessment fair?
Yeah, it's the video he said would explain that.
Well,
I'm only kidding. I don't want to hear it.
Don't know if I have that. Okay.
I now have a thorough understanding. Everybody listening does too.
Yeah. I kind of related to.
I feel very educated now.
Do you?
Well, one of the problems in talking about private property is that there's two separate things. There's the private property that's immovable, and there's private property that's movable. And so we've been, you know, kind of relating, because our movable private property is not generally taxed unless we have some form of commerce. But, you know, the private property, as in land, it's always there. It's always in some form of jurisdiction, and that jurisdiction has revenue they need to collect to maintain the local government. And it goes back to Milton Friedman's argument. Well, is when there is some sort of revenue that needs to be collected, maybe that is the best tax. Maybe it's not. I don't know, because it, to me, I don't like it. I appreciate what Ireland has done, and at times it makes me want to just live on the ocean in international waters, tax free.
What blows my mind out of this whole thing, which, Kirk, I'm a big fan of the seasteading thing, and I think we should do a whole show on that.
Yeah, yes. That's a great idea.
What blows my mind in that people are willing to stand by and watch this happen. You're getting charged property taxes for the property that you own, pretty much regardless of where you live. I mean, Alaska notwithstanding, let's not go there, but pretty much wherever you live, you're being charged taxes. However, The most remarkable part of it is, even if you own the land, you do not necessarily own the mineral rights of the land that you own. So theoretically, you could be paying property taxes on a piece of land that has a valuable resource that you don't actually own.
When do your mineral rights end?
It depends on the state.
Yeah, that's definitely area, but
yeah,
in the general sense, it goes to the middle of the earth and comes out in a cone shape and goes up into the air rights as well. But so essentially, you have that property to the middle earth, but it does depend on what sovereign state you live in.
Well, there's tens of thousands of people who have had rights to property that have been cheated out of the mineral rights in their property.
Yeah, I have that in my family. We own mineral rights to various properties in Kansas and Oklahoma, or no longer own the family, but no longer own the land, but still own the rights.
Yeah, well, that's
a smart way to go about it.
Sale. I mean, that's a something in the sale of the property that you can work
exactly.
out.
Exactly. Yeah. That's but, part of a contract made from one individual to another. I agree. And I have no problem with two people or two parties making a contract with one another saying, I want to purchase the land, I want to retain the mineral rights. That's between private individuals. But if we're going to bring this thing back to liberty and what does liberty mean, I think liberty means being able to own my own property. And if we have property taxes, how can we actually own it?
How about
and regardless
owning yourself?
Of what's convenient, I mean, regardless of what's convenient in terms of raising money for localities, there are plenty of ways we can figure that out. And I don't care about what's convenient. I care about the ability for private, you know, people in this country to be able to actually say, I own this. This is mine. I paid for it. It's mine. I own it. It doesn't belong to the government. It doesn't belong to the greater of America. It's mine. I paid for it. I can fulfill my own dream. I can own my own land and live there. And that land will be there for my children and for my children's children, and nobody can take it away, assuming that no one within my family sells it or makes a contract to sell it. It belongs to us. You know, and if you have property taxes, there is no such thing as private property.
Should we roll that RT clip I referenced that goes over how Ireland specifically doesn't have property taxes?
Sounds good.
You know, how it could be a blueprint for other spots?
Sounds good.
All right, I'll roll it.
Awesome opening.
There's an election today in North Dakota, and what's on the ballot isn't what you'd expect. It's an amendment to the North Dakota Constitution to end altogether the property tax in that state. I have to tell you, if I lived in North Dakota, I'd probably vote for it. At the same time, and on the other side of the Atlantic, there's an interesting news out of Ireland this week, kind of the opposite. The Irish are considering starting a property tax, a tax on land. This is something brand new for the Irish, although it has a long history here in the United States. A few years back, I was invited to Ireland to give a speech, and on the way back to the airport, a very chatty cab driver asked me a startlingly simple question. How is it, he asked, that you Americans aren't allowed to own land? I asked him what he was talking about. At that time, Louise and I owned a home in Atlanta, and the mortgage was nearly paid off. He said, it's really simple. Here in Ireland, I own my home, and the government can never take it away from me. But in America, you just rent your land from the government. And if you don't pay your property taxes, the government will take your land away and sell the right to pay rent, taxes, on it to somebody else. At that time, there was no property tax in Ireland, just as there isn't right now. If you lost your job, you kept your home. If you were wiped out by illness or accident or any other sort of disaster, you kept your home. The government could never take it away from you. It was that way when our nation was founded as well. Property taxes were used in part to fund the American Revolution, but they were on all the property you owned, your horses, cows, corn, even on slaves in the South, and on the value of your house, but usually not at all on your land. In 1818, two generations after the American Revolution, Illinois became the very first state to levy an equalized, standardized property tax on land across the entire state. By 1900, 33 states had done the same. As of today, every state in the union basically owns your land and rents it to you, that rent being called property tax. And if you don't pay your rent, you lose what you thought was your land. A home and lot worth $100,000 can be seized and auctioned off for being $50 behind in property taxes. When Thomas Jefferson was president, his old friend, the Marquis de Lafayette, asked him to translate a book on economics by a French economist named Desuit de Tracy. Jefferson translated it into English and sent the manuscript to Lafayette, although he begged Lafayette to keep it a secret that he'd done so because, as a sitting president, he didn't want to be seen as interfering in economic and political debates in Europe. But Jefferson translated the book because it confirmed a lot of his own previous thinking. First of all, he thought that poor people shouldn't pay any taxes and that the rich should pay a lot of taxes. And in 84 letter to James Madison, he wrote, "Taxes should be proportioned to what may annually be spared by the individual." A year later, in 1785, he added his thoughts on taxes on property, which included real estate, in another letter to Madison. He wrote, "Another means of silently lessening the inequality of property is to exempt all from taxation below a certain point and to tax the higher portions of property in geometrical progression as they rise." If the ban on property taxes in North Dakota fails today, as it almost certainly will, Jefferson's suggestion would be a great compromise, one that's followed right now by many of the nations of the world. Only have people pay property taxes when they have a relatively high income and or net worth, when they're pulling out so much cash from a society that they can afford to give some back to the country that made them rich. Bottom line, it's wrong that in America you can lose your home, particularly a modest home, simply because you lost your job or your health or your spouse. The tragic reality is that those three things account for most of the people who lose their homes. And while it's not always property taxes that push people over the edge to give up their homes, it happens that way too often. We should suspend property taxes nationwide on anyone who's been unemployed or been financially wiped out. And we should put an income threshold above which taxation begins and below which no property tax is paid. Let the homeowner with a modest home spend their entire life not paying property taxes, while people like Mitt Romney, who's so rich he hired a lobbyist to argue for a city zoning variation on his beachfront California mansion so he could build an elevator for his wife's second Cadillac, let people like that pay a graduated progressive property tax. We do it with income taxes. Why should property taxes be any different?
Soak the rich.
That opens a whole other can of worms, doesn't it?
I'm all for that until I become rich.
That's how most people feel. The Robin Hood syndrome, is that it? I mean, I guess at the end of the day, we could have the argument about whether a progressive taxism system is appropriate or not. But that to me is an entirely different conversation. I just feel as though with property taxes, the existence of them at all eliminates the ability for us to privately own land.
Just in case it wasn't clear, I was joking when I said that, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I think we all are. Well, yeah. To me at least.
Yeah. To our listeners who are listening.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess all that I've really heard is that it's a more convenient way of raising funds for localities. And I guess when it comes down to sacrificing the existence of private property versus having a convenience, I don't see that that's worth it. And I know that there are many other solutions to that issue. I mean, there are plenty of other avenues to raise funds, and I just don't think it's appropriate to be taxing property itself.
So what are some successful avenues, you know, to providing the financial resources to, you know, support schools, you know, just basic public services, sanitation, safety, so fire and, you know, and police and that type of thing. Are Chelsea, are you aware of other strategies that are that have been successfully used to provide those funds?
I guess I just have to go back to, you know, sales taxes, use taxes, and income taxes.
But are there examples of that you can think of?
Well, I mean, we use it to fund however many other functions of our government. I don't see why there would have to be, why we would have to say, well, it works for these functions, but somehow it doesn't work for those. They're indistinguishable as far as I'm concerned. I don't see how we could successfully raise funds to pay off our, you know, enormous amount of interest that we accrue every single day to the Federal Reserve, and income taxes work very well for that, or for national defense, you know, once we start to take a dig in that after the interest on every dollar is taken care of. I mean, we can raise plenty of money, you know, with sales taxes, with use taxes. That's not an issue. Why does it have to be property taxes specifically that fund local expenditures?
You know, I don't think there's any possible way that we could use sales tax, which can buy a Viking stadium, to fund, you know, plowing streets. It just doesn't seem sensible.
Right? Exactly.
I completely agree. I honestly find sales and use tax to be what should be the ultimate resource for government financing. I think taxing businesses, I think taxing income are both anti-productive. I think it should all be done through the consumption tax. And
I would agree with that. And I know that there are some people who say, who argue that it's unfair, even though I think it's the fairest form. The more you use, the more you pay. You know, if you are on the lower income scale, you're not going to be buying a Porsche. You're going to be buying, you know, rusted out Civic, you know.
Well, so actually,
your
said,
is going to be, you know. Go ahead.
That said, I also would like to just throw in there, I think multiple times taxing the same thing is wrong. So I think the poor could actually benefit even more because you wouldn't be taxing a car every time it's sold. You would only tax it the first time it's sold. You've already paid the tax on that item. You shouldn't have to pay it a second time when you sell it a second time.
Oh, thank you.
You're not a proponent of the value-added tax, Matt? Is that what you're saying?
You're saying by putting 20,000 miles on the car, you've added value to it.
No, I think what he's saying is that when you buy a car, the first person that buys a vehicle pays tax on the entire value of that vehicle. And then if they in turn sell it, and then that person in turn sells it again, and then that person in turn sells it again, they're collecting sales tax four or five times over on something where the entirety of the sales tax was paid on the initial purchase. So if someone, you know, buys a car, and then that particular car gets sold five times, it gets taxed five times, you know, on the value of the vehicle at each time of the sale. So, yes, the amount of sales tax they pay each time it gets sold goes down, but the entirety of the bill was paid up front on the first sale. I agree with you, Matt, that to tax the same piece of property over and over and over again is double dipping, triple dipping, quadruple dipping. It's absolutely ridiculous. And like you said, it would only benefit the lower and lower middle class to get rid of that.
But what about if used car sales?
That's used exactly car what we're talking about.
Well, I mean, most of the, I thought what you're referencing is person-to-person selling of the car. They don't have to pay tax, but a used car sales. So why
Period.
Not?
Used cars or person-to-person. It's the same difference to me.
Where do you stop at that logic, though? I mean, so a farmer
it's only
produces
a new
grain,
car
I know,
the first
but
time that it's
out,
sold.
Though. Why would the car manufacturer have to pay the tax? Just because they put it together? Why not?
Well, they don't.
Tax
see, that's
the steel manufacturer.
It's the buyer's
tax.
Yeah, see, here's when I go, one of the most frequent mistakes that I've ever found, whether I'm talking to small business owners or whether I was talking to my students. One thing that I think that the mass population doesn't understand about sales tax, and it's primarily through the way that we've structured payments. A lot of people believe, like, okay, so small business owners, I can't tell you how many times I've seen on their income statement, sales tax expense. There is no such thing as sales tax expense for the seller. No such thing. The person who owes sales tax is the purchaser. Now, the only reason that the purchaser doesn't have to do a sales tax return is because they have made the seller responsible for remitting the appropriate amount of sales tax. But it is not the expense of the seller, it is the expense of the purchaser. So to be a used car salesman, you never had sales tax expense. That expense didn't belong to you. It's just that the government has charged you with collecting the expense from the purchaser, so the person buying the vehicle owes that money, and they have said you're responsible for collecting the money and sending it to us. That's the way that we framed our system, because it was much easier to administer an audit and to ensure proper payment if that responsibility was the burden of the business owner, because they didn't trust that each individual citizen would voluntarily remit payment and record all of their purchases. So every single time I went to the grocery store and the gas station this month, I wouldn't keep every single receipt, be able to appropriately calculate the amount of sales tax I owed and submit that payment to the government. So it's much easier for them to administer a program where the responsibility for remittance of both payment and submitting the sales tax return is placed on the business owners, but the expenses of the purchaser.
Yeah, but we're also talking in tax terms with a property tax already in place. So if we were to wipe out the property tax and talk about a sales tax, it would have to be essentially a different thing. It definitely still would go be through the business that has the responsibility of paying the property or the sales tax.
Well, the user, but my point was, the user pays the sales tax.
The person who purchases it, they sell it, but the business is the one that collects that. And
yes, so they don't pay.
The administrative burden, yeah.
Yes, but my point is, if you just say, all right, you produce a new car, that's the one-time tax.
Yes.
So well, no, but only, the producer doesn't have any tax liability. That's the whole point. The producer doesn't have the liability for paying. I mean, they don't have the expense.
Let me rephrase what I'm saying then. So when you purchase something that was produced, that is sales tax. So it's only when something's produced. So if someone that produces the steel, the car manufacturer pays the tax because they purchased the steel.
No, they don't.
You have a reseller. So if I'm a reseller, if I'm a middleman, the way that it works is such that if I am, let's say that I bought accounting software and I was going to then sell that to my client, I would pay no sales tax on that. And it's part of having a being a reseller.
Current tax codes.
Saying you want to implement this?
I'm saying if
we're going to have a national sales tax or a state sales tax that covers the gamut to replace property tax and to replace income tax, you're saying you would only tax when you purchase something that is created? I mean, so where do you draw the lines here? Where's the sales tax coming? I mean, this is going to be an astronomical sales tax if you only have to pay a tax when you purchase a new car or something that was produced as such in the same manner.
It's going to be high. It's not going to be what it is today, but you're not going to have to pay your income tax anymore.
My point, you guys were arguing that anymore. So when a farmer sells his grain, who purchases the grain doesn't have to pay sales tax on that?
No, it's the end user of the product. The initial end user.
Why is there an end user? Who's to say when there's an end user? So it depends on what you're going to
do. Dude, you can't sit there and convince me that somebody who buys like a pair of pants aren't the end user of the pair of pants. It's not like they're going to... Somebody who buys a car to use it as a car is the end user of the car, and the first purchaser
is to keep tax levels low, it would transcend to everything, to where you purchase something that is a tax.
But that's not the argument. We're not talking about what level the taxes need to be at. We started today talking about the fact that we do not have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem.
Yes.
That said, what we're talking about is the way the current and what I believe the future tax code should rely on is sales and use. And if it's sold one time, it should not be collected a second time on the same product. It's as if you are charging it's almost double jeopardy in the sense of what our Constitution was formed on. That's the argument that I'm making.
Why would you ever buy a new car when you can just go buy a used car and not have any tax?
Because I want a new car. Why did I buy a brand new car when I bought the car that I own now when I could have bought a used one? I paid, as soon as you drive a car off the lot, it loses value. I paid for that value drop in my car because I wanted that car. And that's up to the person who is purchasing it. While I may have foolishly paid for that money,
burden on top of that to not do that in the first place. The cost benefits are going to be skewed to where you're not even going to want to purchase them. I don't think that's true.
But this does nothing but benefit the lower and lower middle class then, because every single car on the road was once a brand new car. And who is going to be purchasing those brand new cars? And who is going to have to bear the burden of that sales tax on the initial car, which is the case that we already have today? Those are going to be the people who can afford it. The people who can afford to purchase the car, the people who can afford that instant depreciation in that first year, in those first 5 years. Me, I'm a frugal person financially, so I don't buy brand new cars, but that's my choice. And the whole point of the matter is, instead of being arbitrarily charged with taxes that are undue, people can make sound financial decisions based on their own personal financial situation.
I don't think that this is really even part of the conversation that we've been having this whole time as far as private property taxes goes. I think there's obviously plenty of revenue opportunities out there. I think that overall what we should be really focusing on is what Chelsea has been so eloquently putting out there this entire time, that we currently rent our property, and that's wrong. We should have a situation where if you own the property, you own it, and that shouldn't be a counted on revenue source for these small and medium-sized governments, your city and county levels. It should be counted on as a it shouldn't be counted on whatsoever. I honestly believe it should be sales and use tax collected and used in any way it needs to be done. I don't think, especially with technology the way it is today, it would be any more difficult than the way taxes are already collected. You could easily within a city, define what you want as your city tax rate. The county could have their tax rate, and the state could have that right on top of it with the national on top of that. You could even spell it out line by line on your receipt how much you're paying for each line item. And guess what? Not only would that show you where your money was going, but it would educate people on how much their money actually does get taxed and how much of it goes to ridiculous programs. And that would piss people off, and it would make people smarter about the amount of money that's spent today.
So a flat local sales tax.
Well, and in addition to all of the wonderful consequences that Matt just mentioned, then let's say that Edina wanted to spend more on their local utilities or their local police force. If somebody said, well, I know that the sales tax is really high in Edina, so I'm going to go just across the border, to Richfield, where their sales tax is a little bit lower, and I'm going to spend my money there. There would have to be competition within the market that would drive those sales tax rates. If someone is in the lower middle class, they'd say, I can't afford that extra 2%. And then they could choose to purchase their products elsewhere, thereby allowing them to save money on taxes by making smarter decisions, by having the ability to make smarter decisions. because they're informed about what it's going to cost depending on where they purchase. And so it does nothing but benefit the lower and lower middle class. That eliminates so much of this inequality that people say would happen with a flatter tax system. If somebody's rich, they can afford to pay all the sales tax in the fancy suburbs or in, you know, Minneapolis, where they've decided to hike up the rates to pay for a stadium. And then maybe people would be more involved when they decided to institute a local tax to raise funds for something that's based in entertainment. Maybe people would be more involved to say, listen, we can't afford this. It's not what we want to pay for.
Free market influence on taxes.
There is an issue with that, where
it would lead to socialism.
Most of the lower,
it definitely would, or communism at worst.
Well, most of the lower class really doesn't pay any form of tax. They get credits, reimbursement. They would actually start paying taxes, and that
they pay sales taxes though.
Well, they pay sales, but that's pretty much it.
Well, and the thing is that on our current income tax returns,
they would pay a heck of a lot more tax.
Is something that's a deduction. They could get a larger refund if they itemized.
Well, they would pay a heck of a lot more tax if you had a flat local sales tax.
And people would be living in a town that charges a huge sales tax, that provides a great police force, a lot of services, and then just go shop at the neighboring city because they don't have any tax and they got a shit police force. They don't care about anything and bad roads, whatever. And the whole system would fail.
Yeah.
And so then what would happen when everybody starts shopping in this shit town that doesn't provide any resources or public utilities?
The one town that
all this surplus. What do you think is going to happen to all those tax resources? I mean,
yeah, Kirk, the argument goes both ways.
It does. It cuts both ways, but
it's a system that will level itself out.
Yeah. Do you guys see the article where Bill Gates could go purchase every single home or every piece of land in the city of Boston and still have $1 billion left over? What if the Federal Reserve came and bought the entire state? What if some country like China cashed in their debt and just said, "Oh, just give us a." You think Bill Gates has a lot of money?
China already owns half of San Francisco. This is something that's already happening.
Wait, what does this have to do with our conversation, though? I don't.
Yeah, the whole point is
usurped.
All of a sudden, you don't own anything.
It's just owned by an
aristocrat.
Don't own
it. That's the whole point.
Society.
We don't own it now. We already don't own it.
My point is that one of the fairest taxes is property taxes.
I mean, are we going to own it less than not owning it at all is what it currently stands? We already don't own it. So what worse thing could you do? And whether it's sales tax or whether it's a negative income tax or whatever you have to do, I would just argue anything but property tax.
I agree.
And I don't care.
I do too.
I don't care what, you know, rational method there is that's taken that is just and fair. And everyone is going to have an argument as to what avenue is fair or unfair. However, I would agree on a fundamental basis against anyone that property tax instantly eliminates the idea and the fact of private property ownership.
Well, I definitely agree. I will not disagree with that fact at all. But in today's terms, with this amount of expenditures our government does, we would first have to contain government to its rational sphere, just sphere, and prevent the injustice that occurs from it. And I just...
It could be a self-solving thing, too. If you implemented this and then you said this is all the money that you get, period, you can't borrow anymore, you might just solve those problems just based on funding.
Well, let me just tell you how you can live on a private property. You just have enough income that's accruing with interest through other investments that pay your property tax, and you can
still not live on private property. That's still renting. That is still rent. I mean, it's feasible, but it's not ownership. It's rental.
Yes.
And I think that it's ridiculous that people believe that we live in a country where there is such thing as private property ownership. There is.
But are you a person when you have to eat? If you don't eat, what happens to you? You die. Is that really, are you alive then? Are you living? Do you have to go and produce to live?
Well, yeah. And so, and my argument earlier was that one of the things that really disturbs me is that if I wanted to be a self-sustaining citizen, I wanted to grow my own food, produce my own energy, have a wood-burning stove, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, you just have to do a little more to be able to pay for it. The tax is my point.
Yeah, to be able to pay my rent. And the whole point is not about what's feasible or what isn't feasible. The entire point is not about can I make it or can I not make it. The whole point is that private property, you know, tax on private property means there is no such thing as private
but
property.
But in the areas to go and live a self-sustaining life cannot happen in a rural area like most of us live. You'd have to live out in live in a rural area is what I'm talking about, to where property taxes are a lot less than what they are in an urban scenario.
To me, I don't care if property tax is a dollar a year or a penny a year. It's still not okay. It's not about the level to which people are being taxed. It's the fact that people are being taxed on private property. I don't care how low that level is. It's still not good enough.
Yes, it's a perfect argument to go to a national sales tax or a state sales tax or anything, because anything, I mean, it doesn't just transcend to private property. It transcends to everything that we have to pay tax on.
Other taxes and how those systems operate are another conversation. But just understanding what I would consider to be a fact, and we can certainly argue against it, but I would say that it is a black and white fact that if you have private property taxes, there is no such thing as private property.
Yep. Yeah. And my thought, I think that it's probably not the cure-all solution, but a flat county, state, and national tax would be the most equitable solution. You know, whether or not that'll happen or not, who knows? Mm-hmm.
I definitely agree.
And I would like to see a flat tax. I know that there are certain people who believe that it's regressive because, and I've heard all the arguments, but, you know, some people believe that, well, you know, in terms of how much cash people have left over after they're done surviving is so much less if you're in a lower class. And so therefore more of your expendable income proportionately is paid towards taxes if they have to pay taxes, which is, you know, part of the argument for the system we have in place now, where we talk about so many people in that lower class that pay zero taxes. So people say, well, that's fair because their expendable income is next to nothing.
Well, they get
so there's that argument.
No, they. Sorry,
go
there's
ahead.
A good chunk of the population that doesn't pay any tax at all.
Oh yes, a good chunk of people, absolutely, and you know, certainly children are a big factor in that. I mean,
isn't that nearing 50% these days?
Yes, I think it's. I wanted to say 47%. That was the number that popped into my mind.
You know, the thing that's interesting about that is that when we talk about paying no tax, people always jump to the income tax, which is not the only avenue that each individual in this country pays tax.
Sure.
I mean, we pay sales tax directly, you know, when we purchase our goods. But then every single item we buy has tax built into it.
And that's what
I'm
referencing.
And what is so silly to me is when people think, well, you know, oh, those greedy corporate bastards, let's tax the hell out of them. What they don't realize is that those corporations, in order to recoup the cost of those increased taxes, they, you know, in order to do that, they have to raise the price of their product, which means that you're paying for that. They're not paying for it. The corporate entity is not paying for it. You are. The consumer is. You know, so it's, you know, the whole, have you seen the picture? It's the snake swallowing its tail.
Wheel of Time series?
Perhaps. Robert Jordan?
You know, it doesn't make any sense. And I wish, you know, I wish more people would understand.
It drives that inflation is what it does.
Well, exactly. The corporations have to raise the prices.
It only harms the poor in the world. I mean, yeah, it makes stuff going on and wages don't follow suit. And it's a system that is, I think, it's going to fail. There's no doubt about it. But,
right.
I mean, really, what does it mean to be an American?
Here we go.
I think, Chelsea, what you were saying before is self-cannibalism.
Yes, yes, self-cannibalism. You know, and so, I mean, when we talk about whether or not, you know, 50% of the population pays taxes, yes, they do. But they don't see it on their tax return, so they don't maybe realize that it's there. And so it's like when someone pays their rent, they don't think about the fact that they're paying taxes when they pay their rent, because
of course not.
It's not line itemed for them. They can't see how much of their rent goes to paying taxes or not, and that's intentional.
Right.
I think that the way that our tax system is set up is to spread it around so much and hide it without having that itemized line item, so that people don't feel connected to the significant amount of their earnings that actually go to taxes. I mean, that's a very, very intentional system. The fact that individuals don't have to submit those sales taxes. And that's one of the only times that you really see a line item that shows you how much tax you're paying. But then you're not seeing, in addition to the sales tax portion of that, the amount of property taxes or the amount of sales taxes or anything else that that vendor had to build into the price itself.
That argument's never going to work, though, when almost 50% of the population essentially pays no taxes. Why would they be like, oh, no, I should start paying taxes? No, the argument needs
to
be what's just and unjust. And the sales tax is actually a consenting of a tax, then, because you're purchasing something, you consent to it. And
yes, I agree with that. But to say that half of the population doesn't pay tax is the majority of the reason why our tax system is so flawed, because people aren't connected with how much taxes they're actually paying.
It wasn't set up in a devious manner like that. It was set up to micromanage the economy.
Entirely different theory. I mean,
that's what it is. I mean, that's how they give tax breaks to some things, and they tax more here and there. It's how you establish control over the economy and you play to people's whims, and it's so anti-freedom and liberty that it has no basis in what this country was originally supposed to be founded on, and it left that basis right away, and it's
the
and
science it, is in.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think we can all agree that to tax the ownership of property goes against liberty. I think that we can all agree that the system we have right now is not liberty-based. I think we can all agree that the system we have in place is not just. Now, are those fair assumptions?
Yep.
Yep,
for sure.
Well, I think that is a spectacular point to close on. I want to thank everybody for joining us this week. It has been Eric Taylor, Chelsea Cummo, Kirk Pettis, and myself, Matt Winter. Our topic next time, that might extend to 2 weeks, is going to be common law and sovereignty. Thanks for joining us.
Good night.
Good night.